What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson. Let's get this started.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition. This week, we're going to be talking about our meal plans again, and specifically why, with all of our meal plans, they consist of a lot of meat. That's come up with a few of our clients, why our meal plans revolve around meat. So we decided to break it down and really dive into why our meal plans revolve around meat. But first, do a little check-in with Tom. How's everything going?
Well, this last weekend, my brother got married, and I was the best man. So kind of went off the wagon a bit. Had a lot of events going on, a lot of family in town.
What type of food they serve at the wedding?
It was buffet style, so you get a little bit of everything. I just got a little bit of like some veggies and then got a bunch of chicken and beef. I don't really know what else was there. I just kind of just knew what I was looking for and made
went
it simple.
For that.
Yeah, so I don't really know what all the other choices were. I just kept it simple. And I had a gigantic meal like first thing in the morning when I woke up that day, so I wasn't really too worried. I had about a pound and a half T-bone steak with like a head of broccoli smothered in butter. It's supposed to be a meal for me and my brother. Well, my brother wasn't hungry and didn't really want steak that early in the morning, so I ended up eating both.
Good.
So
that's a good problem to have.
So I was good. I didn't really need to eat for dinner. I just did because everybody else was. But yeah, now that's over with. Getting back on track. Been eating good the last couple of days and working out. But yeah, definitely fell off the wagon pretty hard for a good 4 days.
Did you drink?
Mostly red wine. Did a couple shots earlier in the day. I don't tend to do chasers unless I absolutely need to. We were drinking tequila. I don't drink tequila very often, so I need a little bit of a soda chaser. We can talk about how you want to drink alcohol, ways to basically mitigate the dangers of it, but we'll do that on a different day. There's quite a bit to go into on that.
Yeah, for sure.
So what about you? What's new with you this week?
This week, I've been reading a new book called Sapiens, and it's a little different for me. It's not specifically about nutrition. It's just about the history of Homo sapiens, you know, the species that we are. And since a lot of our plans, again, this ties into great, this today's podcast, revolve around meat, and the argument is really a ancestral-based argument. It really revolves around things we've been eating for millions of years. I thought it'd be prudent for me to know more about ancient humans and more about how they lived and where they lived and what they ate, stuff like that. So I've been looking into that and just read a whole little section on the agricultural revolution, and that shit was whack. For sure shouldn't have done that. It seems like everything has just gone downhill since then as far as health and happiness and all that type of stuff. But
so is this more of a anthropology book instead of a biology book?
Yeah, I guess you can say that. Yeah. And some storytelling mixed in. Like, it's an easy read. I wouldn't say it's very dense. It's long as shit, but it's not very hard. If you think about it, which this book kind of talked about, you win evolution by simply reproducing. So the species that has the most out there wins. So that's what evolution cares about. That's really the driver. They want to make more of us. So they want everyone to reproduce as much as possible. So the agricultural revolution allowed that. It allowed for more food stores and it allowed for populations to boom. And they did. They quickly went from a few million Homo sapiens across the entire planet to a 250,000 within, you know, a couple thousand years. It was crazy, huge boom. But the thing is, what's good for the group sometimes isn't always good for the individuals. And that's exactly what happened with agricultural revolution. And there were definitely more people on the planet, but now there's a lot more sick people, a lot more unhealthy people, a lot more miserable people. For a long time, for the great majority of human evolution, 90% of the people on the planet were in some sort of servitude, because that's what it takes to till crops, that's what it takes to actually be a farmer. No one wants to do that shit. You have to be a servant, you have to be forced to do it in slavery, things like that. So it honestly sucks, but once we got a few generations into it, we were too far deep. We couldn't turn back. Because turning back meant, okay, we need to let half the world's population die, and nobody's going to fly for that. So
Well, yeah, I'm pretty sure if you're the world leader that's recommending that, I think people are going to turn on you pretty fast and probably execute you and find somebody that's got another plan.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it's true. I mean, the world's just extremely overpopulated nowadays, and we can thank agriculture for that. Agriculture really only started maybe 10,000 years ago, so it's still a fairly new thing as far as on the timescale of human evolution. You can think of Homo sapiens being around for, well, maybe not Homo sapiens specifically, but things that evolved to be Homo sapiens for about 2.5 million years. Maybe 4, depending how far you want to go back, but definitely 2.5 at least. So in the grand scheme of things, 10,000 years ain't shit. I guess I'm still training, still doing good, still having my carb meal post-workout. Like today, I just had steak and rice, and still feel good with that. Haven't got fat yet.
Have you put on any weight or noticed any differences?
You know, I notice I feel a little different. Like, I have more energy when I train. I feel like I'm honestly a little leaner, but that might be because I also transitioned just to one meal a day. So I only eat one meal a day, and that's been pretty much exactly when I transitioned into carbs. I transitioned to one meal a day. So it kind of messed up my test if you think about it, because now I have two variables. So really, what's helping, what isn't. But
it seems like a kind of a hard transition, though, to add a carb meal and then eat less, like, overall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's been good. Like, I'm not struggling with it. And I totally think if someone out there says they like rice, they're lying. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. I went so long without eating any sort of carbs, and that's on purpose. And now I don't even really consider myself eating carbs. I consider myself supplementing with starch, and it's just a different mindset. But, like, I have a great steak after my workout. You know, I'll have maybe 3 pounds. Then I have a little bit of rice on the side, and I eat the steak, and it's nice, it's juicy, it tastes good. Then I eat this rice, and it's just little hard, like, fluff balls that don't taste like nothing. And I'm like, who likes this shit? Like, why would anyone eat this just to eat it? Like, I eat it for a purpose. I eat it to, you know, regenerate glycogen. I eat it to kind of raise my insulin a little bit. But if I didn't want to do those things, I would never eat rice. I don't get why anybody would eat it.
Well, it's like really nothing to it nutritionally. Like, nothing. Not much. I mean, it's a good vehicle for, like, taste if you add stuff to it.
I mean, like, maybe that's why I don't like it, because I don't add anything to it.
It's yeah, just you know, I like sushi is good. I mean, that's fish and, you know, some veggies wrapped in rice. That tastes good, but that's not because of the rice. It's because of everything else.
Yeah.
Like Spanish rice or like Mexican rice. That's good, but that's good because of everything that's added to
it. The flavors.
Yeah. I can't really think of a rice dish that's by itself that's good.
But it's funny when people talk about rice, everyone says they love rice. They don't say, yeah. Oh, I love the things added to rice.
I think they're just mistaken.
Just mistaken. Yeah. That's probably true.
I don't know. I use cauliflower and chop that really thin anytime like a recipe calls for rice. And I don't really notice the difference. It looks the same. It kind of fulfills the same purpose. It's got a lot more nutritionally dense. I mean, pretty much everything's more nutritionally dense than rice. Rice is like the complete opposite of that word.
It really is.
I mean, when it comes to like a real food source, that's probably one of the lowest in that department.
That's true. Yeah.
I haven't really noticed anybody really complain too much about cauliflower rice versus rice.
People like it.
Yeah. It looks the same. It still binds everything together, so it serves the same purpose. I don't know how it would work with sushi, but, I mean, outside of that, it seems to work pretty fine with most other meals.
Yeah, it's definitely a good option. So this whole podcast, today's episode, I kind of wanted to talk about this because I kind of got on a protein kick, because you hear a lot about beans and the content in beans and soy and the content in soy. And specifically them being high in protein for either vegetarians or vegans. And if we're talking about crude protein, that's true. There is protein content in beans and soy. But there are two major flaws with that way of thinking. So crude protein takes all nitrogen in the sample. It counts non-protein nitrogen. So it's all nitrogen. It multiplies it by 6.25, which is just 1 divided by 0.16. And they get that number because protein itself is 16% nitrogen. So there are two assumptions there, that all the nitrogen in the sample is protein, and that all that protein is in the form of amino acids. That's two really big assumptions, and not good for us as humans, and specifically monogastrics, which we are. We have one stomach, similar to a pig or a chicken or a turkey, monogastrics. The difference would be like a ruminant. They have multiple stomachs. So the problem with that is monogastrics can't absorb non-protein nitrogen. Examples of that would be urea or ammonia. They contain nitrogen, or even DNA, like in the cell. DNA is made up, like nucleotides are made up of nitrogen. So crude protein takes nitrogen into account that humans can't even digest. And then it magnifies it by 6.25. And that's the number you see on the back of a nutrition label. So if you see something like a can of beans has 10 grams of protein per serving, that's really not accurate. Because that counts, that's again with those two assumptions, that all that nitrogen is tied into amino acids and that it's not non-protein nitrogen. So in all reality, beans are about 52% amino acids tied up in nitrogen, or excuse me, nitrogen tied up in amino acids. With something like steak, it's 92% of that nitrogen is tied up in amino acids. And in monogastrics, the only way we can absorb nitrogen is in the form of amino acids. That's it. So all that other stuff just goes to waste. So it just kind of bugs me that this, I guess the formula is used, because the only people who's really benefiting are the grains, the beans, the vegetables, because that's what's helping. With beef, most of that protein is in the form of amino acids, so it doesn't matter. We're getting the actual protein content that it says we're getting. But with vegetables and beans, we're not. Did you know that?
I knew a lot of that, but not as deep into the science as you just went into. I knew it from a very elementary level, because I never really needed to know that much about it.
I was interested this week, so I took a deep dive.
Yeah, that's a lot further into it. So basically what he's saying, to just kind of transfer it into normal English, is that the reason that beef has, you're able to use all that protein from beef, is because it comes with all the essential amino acids. That's one thing that's different with our stomachs versus something like a cow, is their list of amino acids that are essential is a lot lower than ours because they can make them. We can't make 9 amino acids. That's why they're essential, and we need to get them through nutrition. The only place to get them from one source is meat. Or you can be really smart about the way you do your vegetables, but you have to do a lot more thinking about this.
And you have to eat a lot more.
Yes, that's true, too. So if you're going to go like the vegetarian route, you need to mix like greens with nuts. And that way you're getting all your amino acids together in one source. So now you can make those complete proteins. And every time you eat one of those meals, if you're trying to count the protein from it, you need to mix and match them. So rice and beans is another way to do that. So beans by themselves, kind of worthless when it comes to protein. Rice and beans, now you're getting a lot more. Now you're able to get the protein from it.
Exactly.
So I don't know how many vegetarians have that chart on their computer, or I mean on their fridge, to let them know, oh hey, every time I eat this, I need to eat this.
Yeah, what amino acid is deficient in this meal?
And I don't know how ancient man would have been able to do something like that, because that seems like a lot of research, a lot of trial and error. And trial and error 5,000 years ago probably would have resulted in you starving to death and dying. I don't think you'd really be able to survive that error. You'd have to have the best luck in the world and just get it right every single time. Because you get sick that one time,
yeah, it's rough. There's no hospital down the street. I want to touch on something you said. You said about the essential amino acids with ruminants. Ruminants, this is a beautiful thing, and then they don't have any essential amino acids. There's no essential fatty acids for a fat. There's no essential amino acids for a cow. Or no essential fatty acids for a cow, no essential amino acids for a cow. You know the only essential nutrient for a cow?
Grass.
Exactly, it's fiber. Now think how beautiful that is. What's essential for us? What's something we have to get? Two things.
Oxygen, water.
Oh, yeah, all that shit. As far as, like, a nutrient.
We have essential amino acids, and we have essential fatty acids. We have nothing else has the word essential with it.
Exactly. And essential means required. It is required for growth. It is required for health. So as human beings, we have two macronutrients that are required, protein and fat. But for a cow, for a ruminant, against with sheep, deer, bison, whatever, they don't have essential fatty acids. They don't have essential amino acids. They just have essential carbohydrates. So it's just, I just love it. I just think it's so, like, that yin and yang with us and ruminants is, like, perfect. Did you know that?
You probably know more about this than I do. Is that because their digestive system is so much longer that the gut bacteria, they have a lot more of it, so they're able to do that? Whereas opposed to us, we do a lot of the digestion before it even gets into our body. We have a very, very small digestive tract.
Yes.
We're cutting up food. We're cooking it. We cook everything, fruits, vegetables, meat. So we're doing a lot of that digestion before it even enters our body. As opposed to a stomach, cow, they have multiple stomachs. Their large intestine is gigantic. They have so much more gut bacteria. So is that just they have more space, more workers able to do all that manufacturing?
Yeah, it's a beautiful system because, and again, this kind of ties back into vegans don't think anything should die, right? Like cows shouldn't even die. But you know what? Cows kill billions of things every day.
What, blades of grass?
Yeah, okay, probably hundreds of blades of grass a day. But every day they feed off of dead bacteria in their gut. So that's where they get their amino acids and fatty acids from, the bacteria in their gut. And guess what? They got an endless fucking supply. They have so many gut bacteria in there. That's what they eat.
Okay.
So they're killing shit. It's small and it's not screaming, but they are. You know what I mean?
Well, there's no such thing as a free meal.
There isn't.
If you're growing crops, you're taking away land, you're taking away an ecosystem from something else, you're spraying those crops with pesticides, which are going to be killing other insects, birds, anything like that. There is no way to eat a meal unless something else dies. That's just nature.
It is, yeah. So I just wanted to touch on that. So if you look at, again, a dietary label and wheat, rice, whatever, vegetables or protein, pretty much cut that in half, because they're talking about crude protein, which humans should not care about crude protein at all. We should only care about true protein, and that is protein tied up in amino acids, and that mainly comes from meat. So that's one of the reasons why our meal plans revolve around meat so much, because protein is such an important, essential macronutrient.
Yeah, so if you are going to be a vegetarian or even try to get protein from plant-based sources, you have to do that mixing and matching properly. And even when you're doing
that. Or supplementing.
But even when you're doing that, you don't get, oh, hey, there's 6 grams of protein from this.
Because that's what it'll say on the label.
Yeah. 6 grams of protein from peanut butter. And then, oh, hey, I'm getting 3 from the broccoli. And then you mix them together. That sounds actually like a horrible combination.
So gross. But I get where you're going.
Probably should have thought of something better.
I'm sure someone does that, though. I'm sure.
Here, let's do this. In your kale salad, you throw some walnuts in there. So you're getting 5 grams of protein from the walnuts. You're getting like 2 grams of protein. You don't just get to add them together, because that's not the way it works. It matters about their amino acid profile. So maybe you're getting like 4 out of that instead of the 7, which it adds up to.
Exactly. So, and that's important, because you can be deficient in protein. So, and especially, I mean, people like us, young males, especially me, like I'm trying to grow every single day. So I want my protein through the roof, and it would be really hard for me to get adequate protein if I was eating a vegetarian diet. I mean, how many nuts would I have to eat? I mean, pounds.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to live like a vegetarian does.
And eat all the time.
Yeah, every vegetarian animal is eating all day.
And that's actually a great transition. Yeah, because we talk about the closest relatives we have to us are other, like, chimps, you know, like people talk about gorillas. Gorillas eat pretty much every waking moment.
Yeah, I think it's about 16 hours a day, somewhere around there.
Yeah. Does that sound fun?
Kind of.
I mean, you're eating ice cream.
I love eating.
Yeah,
so,
I guess. Yeah.
But I eat maybe 1 hour out of the day. And, you know, that's because I eat 2 gigantic meals per day. Yeah. So it takes me a while to choke those down. But I've also ate 0 times a day. I do that somewhat regularly, and it's pretty easy to do.
Yeah,
I kind of like those days. They're a lot more productive.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So, yeah, that's another great point. As far as just this gun ties into history and how humans evolved, if you look at our closest relatives, like the gorilla, they have huge, large intestines. So if you just see a frame of a human being, big head, and then narrow, very small abdomen. At least if you're in shape. You walk around nowadays, it's a little different. But we definitely shouldn't have, you know, 40-inch waists.
Yeah, go to a Golden Corral and you can't say the same
thing. I know. Got a bunch of gorillas walking around that bitch.
But, oh, by the way, our heads are gigantic for our size.
Way too big.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely stand out. And that's because we have huge brains. And our brains are so energy intensive. I think they account for 2% of our total body weight, but they account for 20% of the energy our body produces. So they suck up 20% of the calories we eat, 20% of the calories our body makes go straight to our brain. And we couldn't grow these brains if we were grazing on food 24/7. Even if we ate grass literally 24/7, 365, we would not get enough calories to support the brains that we have. So we needed nutrient-dense food, and that for millions of years of evolution, that was meat. That's how our brains grew 3x. In the last couple million years, our brains grew over 3 times. And that's because we learned, one, how to kill animals, how to eat animals, how to break bones, get bone marrow, and then how to cook animals. And that's why we won evolution. Our brains grew. While everyone else, their guts grew, our brains grew.
Yeah, so adding on to that, if we were spending all that time grazing, how would we also at the same time find all that time to go out and find nuts to balance it out, to get a complete amino acid profile, and to also get our omega 3s and omega 6s from the nuts, because we're not getting any of that from the grass. So there's two major, if you include both fatty acids and all the essential proteins, there's a lot lacking from that type of diet. Not to mention, you know, your vitamin B12 and some other deficiencies that are going to pop up as well. So, like, now you don't have enough time, and you're not getting a very good nutrient profile. And then not to mention, if the weather turns south,
you're fucked.
Yeah, good luck.
Good luck.
And good luck fasting if you're used to eating 16 hours a day. I think going, you know,
20 minutes.
Yeah, that seemed like you'd be starving to death.
You'd be starving. Yeah, it's very true. And that's a good point as far as the weather turns, because all of human evolution happened in an ice age. 10,000 years ago, agriculture started for a couple reasons, but primarily it was a climate change. Weather warmed up, and we're technically still in ice age now, but it's more temperate. So it allowed us to actually grow and manage fields. But for the bulk of human evolution, even very close to the equator, the winters were very long and the summers were short and still pretty cold. Like, it wasn't like you're getting 110 degree weather over in Africa. It was still pretty cold. So that short period of time when natural tubers, natural fruits were around, and they were around, I'm not saying those didn't exist, they definitely did. And early humans had to be opportunistic. They had to go, they ate, if they found a tree full of blueberries, guess what? Tomorrow that tree didn't have any more blueberries. They were going to town. They were eating all they could. And I get it, because they're trying to survive. But the bulk, the huge majority of our diet came from meat. Because we could hunt 24/7, 365. It doesn't matter if it was 100 degrees or 0 degrees. Animals were there. Animals were able to dig through that ice. They were able to eat the grass, even in the dead of winter. And then we were smart enough. We had good shoulders. We had opposable thumbs. We can make weapons. We can make knives. We hunted those animals and ate meat.
So when it comes to animals, we are able to get a complete amino acid profile. And yes, the main thing most people think of when it comes to protein is muscle, adding muscle. You listen to any bodybuilder, they're going to tell you need to take your protein shakes after your workout. But protein does a lot more for our body than just muscle. It creates a lot of building blocks for pretty much any type of growth. It does more than just bones. It does more than muscles, bones, joints, all that. But it's also great for...
Bone is half protein, by the way. I want to point that out. Most people think bone is like a big chalk stick, but it's not.
It's, you know, most people think calcium, vitamin D is what you need. But yes, you also need a lot of protein. Collagen protein is the best type of protein to get. You're getting that from muscles. You can also get that from sources like bone broth. Collagen protein is what makes up all those like building blocks. So when you're talking about, you know, your bones, joints, tendons, ligaments, your connective tissue like that, collagen protein is what most of that's made out of. So great source of that, muscle meat. But also when it comes to like neurotransmitters, those are protein. So another use of protein is it makes up all of our enzymes. And enzymes, which makes everything in your body possible. Time allows everything to change, but your enzymes make that time go by so much faster. You need so many enzymes to do any basic function, so you need protein to make up those enzymes. It makes all those, everything that's changing in your body, it makes them go by so much faster, and those are generally the limiting factor of how much energy you can create in this amount of time. So when you're doing sprints, the reason you can't sprint for 2.5 hours is because your enzymes can only do so much work.
Yeah, that's a great point and so true. Without enzymes, we wouldn't be human. Without enzymes, we wouldn't have evolved. It's very key, and proteins build up enzymes.
We would be as fast as rocks. We would just be sitting there doing nothing.
Yeah, you think snails are slow? Live without enzymes. We'd be puddles. Our DNA is made of protein. Nucleotides, A, T, C, G to C, those are made of nitrogen as well.
It's hard to find a complete list of all the sources or all the functions that protein serves because that list is endless. And your body can also convert protein into other things as well. If you do need extra glucose for something, your body has the ability to convert protein into glucose. It's called gluconeogenesis. So your body can create glucose if it needs it, as long as you have enough protein available.
Or body fat.
You can convert fat into glucose?
Oh, for sure. Because triglyceride is just three...
glycerols?
Well, it has a cholesterol backbone with three fatty acids. Yeah, so it's honestly easier to convert fat into glucose and protein into glucose, but your body can do both. So.
Okay, I've not heard that one before.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay.
Yeah. When your body breaks down a triglyceride, what do you think it does with that cholesterol backbone?
No idea.
Yeah, just glucose.
Because I hear so many people talk about limiting protein out of the fear of gluconeogenesis.
Yeah, completely bunk. That's not true.
Then why wouldn't people be able to survive off of a high protein diet versus a high fat diet?
Because that fat is required to handle the byproducts of protein metabolism. Okay. So you think of protein metabolism like a Christmas tree. This is how I describe it to people. So at the top of the Christmas tree, you have, and this is going for meat, something with a complete amino acid profile. You eat that meal. And then the protein, it's not like it's a straight line. It's not like it's a grid. That methionine breaks down to this, then to this, then to this, then you're done. Everything is interacting with each other in a great web. So again, picture a Christmas tree. At the top, you have your meal. At the bottom, you have hundreds and hundreds of different byproducts that is produced and made by these proteins. And again, every protein source in nature is paired with fat. So that fat is there to help metabolize the byproducts of these hundreds and hundreds of reactions. So when that doesn't happen, either you don't have the fat, just think of this Christmas tree. Halfway down the tree, you're going to have an endpoint. There's not supposed to be an endpoint. You're going to have some byproducts that fat's supposed to metabolize and or another amino acid that you're not getting if you're getting an incomplete amino acid source. So now your body has to deal with this byproduct, which can be toxic, can call it something called rabbit starvation. And you're not metabolizing these proteins fully. And so that's where the problem comes in.
So all that excess fat that comes with like natural sources of proteins working as a antioxidant.
Like a buffer. Exactly.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So all those free radicals aren't getting oxidized there. Okay.
Yeah. And it's just, they're literally like cofactors with these reactions. They're needed for these reactions to occur. So it's essential. Like you can go get a whey protein powder and you can't live off that. You know what I mean? Even though whey is a complete protein source, but you can drink that. I don't know how long it would take, probably like 3 or 4 days. But if you had nothing but that, you would eventually get really, really sick.
Well, isn't there a lot of micronutrients and is the essential fatty acids lacking from that?
Yeah, 100%. And those are all, again, cofactors in these reactions. So again, in this huge Christmas tree. And if you ever just Google protein metabolism or amino acid metabolism, it's very complex. And I understand probably 1% of it. But there's a lot of shit going on. So we need vitamins, we need minerals, we need fat, all to produce adequate protein stores from the food we eat. And again, we get all that from a steak. There is nothing missing. If you get whatever, I had 3 pounds of steak today, I got every vitamin, mineral I could possibly need, every protein, every essential amino acid, every essential fatty acid my body needs, I got in that meal. And people think there isn't vitamin C in meat, and that's simply not true. In about a pound of meat, specifically coming from a ruminant, you get a little over 10 milligrams of vitamin C. And 10 milligram is the low end of the RDA for vitamin C. Before, they hyped it up with the antioxidant properties of vitamin C. But just for, and this is again, even on a carb-based diet, this is a carb-based diet, RDA vitamin C is 10 milligrams. So for someone like me, or even like you when we're fat adapted, our RDA for vitamin C, I bet, is way lower than 10. I bet it's under 5. I bet it's half that.
And we've already touched on this on a, I think on a previous podcast, probably the carnivore one. The reason that the vitamin C is so high, or the reason that it's not listed on a steak, is because they don't measure it.
Yeah, if you look at a USDA list of vitamin C for like a steak, it'll just say zero.
Yeah, and that's only because they don't measure it. It's not that it's not there. And then a higher cut would be liver. Liver does have a pretty significant amount of vitamin C. So in case you are wondering, or if you are sick and you're looking for that vitamin C boost and you're looking for a natural, like healthy way to get it, liver would probably be the best way to go.
Yes. And if you're looking for real vitamin C, this is where you want to get it from. Something like liver is a great source of real vitamin C. If you look at vitamin C in like a supplement, you're really getting ascorbic acid, which technically isn't vitamin C. It's like an isomer of vitamin C. It's not real vitamin C. So again, I want to actually have a podcast about that, like a segment on that. I haven't looked too deep into that, but that's kind of a scam as well. And it like kind of touches on the antioxidant properties of vitamin C, and it's not real vitamin C. Ascorbic acid isn't vitamin C.
Okay.
You know what's a better antioxidant than vitamin C?
Is it another vitamin or?
Well, just something nobody would think about. Uric acid. People think uric acid is like gout. That's a bad thing. And excessive uric acid is. But no one would tell you, hey, bro, you're sick. Go take a ton of uric acid for the antioxidant content.
And what would be a major food source for that?
So, yeah, uric acid is in red meat, organ meat especially. So that's a great source if you wanted that antioxidant, even though it's not the best one. It's sure as shit better than vitamin C. So cholesterol is a better antioxidant. Glutathione, which our body makes a master antioxidant, comes from glutamine and methionine. We get that from meat. So vitamin C is overhyped just tenfold. It just is.
Yeah, so I think that should just about do it. Some more health benefits of why we recommend meat. You know, it's got all your amino acids in one source, so you don't have to, you know, think about everything, doing a little bit of a math equation, make sure you have the right amounts of greens with the right amount of nuts, or the right amount of rice with the right amount of beans, something along those lines, to make sure you're getting your essential amino acids. And then also you're getting a great natural profile of your omega fatty acids as well, and usually a pretty healthy ratio. You want to keep your 3-6 around a 1-1, a 2-1 ratio, and those are found pretty much in balance in natural sources such as eggs or red meat. So I think that should just about do it for today's topic of meat. I'm sure it'll come up again.
It will. This is something I think about a lot. This is something I always tend to look into, always read into, so I can talk about this stuff forever. Do we have a tip of the week this week?
Tip of the week would be meal prepping. I don't think we've really discussed that one completely yet. So anytime that you're going to be, I get it, everybody has work, so you're looking for some quick, handy meals. When you have time, maybe on a Sunday night, or if you're just making dinner one night, make sure you're making enough food for 2-3 other meals after that. You can throw some in the freezer to have a quick ready meal ready to go. What I typically do is whatever I eat for dinner one night, I eat for lunch the next day. So I'll make at least enough for two. If it's something I really like, maybe, or something's on sale, I'll buy a bunch of it, freeze some of it, so I have quick handy meals any other time. So meal prepping is a very big one.
Yeah, that's really key to succeed in these programs and to see just to eat better every day. Don't even have the temptation to have those meals ready to go.
Yeah, it's so much easier. You know, you had a long day at work and you got a little bit of a drive home. You're like, yeah, you know what, let me stop at that In-N-Out. But then you could just think like, oh, hey, I have a meal that all I have to do is just microwave it in 2 minutes and it'll be ready when I get home. When you have that thought process, instead of, damn, I got to go to the store, I got to go buy some eggs, I got to go buy some bacon and then cook it, you know, you're saving yourself those 30 minutes, but what you're really saving yourself is just you skipping that shitty meal that you're about to eat. So, yeah, just it's always good to have nice, healthy food sources we got fridges, we got freezers, we might as well use them.
Yep, that's a good point. All right, that's another episode in the books. Again, you can find us at tntwellnessandnutrition.com. If you have any questions or just want to reach out, you can email us at tntwellnessandnutrition.com, or excuse me, tntwellnessandnutrition@gmail.com. And you can find us on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all those places.
Yeah, please feel free to reach out to us. We're trying to do some Q&A podcasts coming up. Just like you said, everywhere, all over the social media. Look for the blue heart with the flexing bicep. I hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.